Ladies and gentlemen, ladies and lizardmen, welcome back to Reptile Ramblings. It's been a hot minute. As always, I'm your host, Nate, and once again, I'm joined by my dutiful co-host, Mr. Bryant McDowell.
Quite dutiful, the most some would say, but thank you, Nate. Yeah, it's been a hot minute, Ramblers. Glad to
The
start the
dawn of
gravy
Junior
train.
Bonds.
The dawn of bonds. Glad to start the gravy train for 26 with y'all. Life, man. Life is it ebbs and flows, but it's awesome. And also not. And also not. Let's be real. I'm an optimist, but I'm also a realist. I think Nate, you as well.
No need to get philosophical on me.
Right out the gate, dude. Yeah, we're here for the herbs.
We're not
No,
here for
but
esoteric nihilism or something.
nihilism, Jesus. I remember those terms too. No, dude, but
Yeah, no,
starting
that's for
off.
next week. No.
Jeez. Yeah, I mean, oof, it's already upon us. Go Hawks. Oops, sorry.
I'm assuming you're talking about hockey, but
Eagles. No, my bad. Wrong season. I don't follow sports. Forget it. But like as we
yeah.
said in the opener, on having a bit of a refresher, it's February 1st. We're doing this, and eventually, as the times are changing, it'll start getting a warmer, pools start filling in, vernal pools, folks.
Yep.
You got a little something to do with those vernal pools in your neck of the woods in Ohio, right?
Yep. Working on a little project with the university I'm at. That because the branch campus I'm on is like 600 plus acres, and more than 500 of that is wet is forest and wetlands. So, pretty decent chunk of habitat right there. So. And they have a couple of different vernal pools already mapped out. And talking to one of the professors there, they need some survey work done on what amphibian populations are utilizing those vernal pools, especially in early, like late winter and early spring, when everyone's actually using the pools. Because they use those pools at and that basically that whole branch campus is like the capstone project for a lot of the forestry majors from main campus will come up and be up there for like 2, 4 weeks, something like that, at the like in May. So they have an idea of what's using those pools in May, but not when everything's using the primary rush, so to speak. So be a good idea to get some data from those guys. And possibly going to be able to use some auditory recording units to record frog calls.
Oh,
So
okay.
the ARUs, or as I like to call them, the amphibian reconnaissance units. So,
I mean, you guys will be reconning the lost comrades or the forgotten comrades, rather. That's hilarious, and really riveting of a project to be had.
more like, I don't think it's riveting. I think it's more like riveting, but.
Yeah, there you go. I led you into that one. That was a great setup. That was so good, dude. That was good.
He's
But
just seen how I set him up before we started recording. He would have dive
dude,
off the internet.
I'm containing myself for the show. So yeah, it was a special treat, Ramblers. But man, so I guess what's the poison going to be? Is it going to be, your mats, your carpet mats, or something more durable, like something made of rubber in terms of the boards?
We're actually probably
Or are
not
you doing like
looking.
a my bad to cut in, but are you doing like a drift fence as well?
No, we're not going to be doing any drift fences.
Okay.
This might just be too much work because you have to check it multiple times a day.
It's a lot.
So it'd be cool to do a drift fence sometime, but now is not the time. But no, so in terms of the vernal pools, that's like very much early spring focus. We're actually going to be using minnow traps to
Oh.
kind of see what happens. And once we know there's stuff moving around there, we're going to take dip nets and just really and give a really good examination of all those pools. So
And obviously, I don't think this is giving too much away, but ambistomids are kind of up there as like top tier wanting to find species, see if they.
Yeah. As thing as out as things I think would be the most personally cool to find would be ambistomids, but I'm probably going to find plenty of like wood frogs and toads and stuff like that, utilizing those. So.
Yeah, I remember a couple of years from your Instagram, you posted. Oh, and I think also you made it into you in a YouTube short of a wood frog that you found road cruising. I think I could be wrong.
Yeah, it was road cruising. That was an Instagram post from like maybe three years ago, maybe 4 years ago, something like that.
I remember because I think it was in one of the. It was in the winter months.
It might have been really like late winter, early spring. If I recall, like March or something like that.
They're cool species. Do you know much about their status in Ohio? Like, are they pretty common? Are they concerned?
From what I know of, and this is by no means an expert analysis.
Yeah, not to put you on the spot, dude, but
I think they're doing fairly well. So,
okay, because for us here, they're a weird one. They have spotty, you would say disjunct populations in like Central East Illinois, and then you know their stronghold here is like Northeast, like Lake County, that sort of a thing. So yeah, they're not really common, I would say, in Illinois. So they're a treat to see whenever you do. And probably like one of the most tolerant frogs in terms of like colder temperatures. Like they can legit be frozen and be okay with it. It's so nutty.
Yeah, they can get all the way up to Alaska. So,
yeah, and then I remember those videos that everybody thought was like the beginnings of animal AI, and it was like maybe not exactly wood frogs, but they're freaking jumping in slow motion over the ice, and like there's no way this is happening. But yeah, folks, frogs are a freaking, as Nate would put it, ribbon. You know, freaking resilient. You know, so. That's neat, man. And you know, I may or may not. Most likely, I may. We'll discuss it. But you know, I would like to play help in the logistics of all that, whether setting up or surveying, yada yada. That'd be really cool. Let me circle back around just to like Sal. So plethodontids too. Would you think you would find some as well?
Oh yeah, I'm pretty confident we'll find.
Because that's a lot of acreage, like. I don't know how much acreage colleges typically acquire or have, but that sounds like a lot, and especially like in your part of Ohio. That's like perfect with woods, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing about Ohio. Think about Ohio is at one point during the 1800s, it was all clear cut. It's depending on which decade the place was clear cut and regenerated. So we had several different tracts of forest in terms of growth stages. So we have young mature. We have tracts of, and like I said, all regenerated forests. We have young forest. We have mature forests, and then we have these plots of pine. What's the term? Not colony, but
like, are they vagrants? Like, are they non-native pines or?
No, they're like planted to like they planted like a couple decades ago to help prevent soil erosion.
But they're like I was saying, are they non-natives? Do you know?
I think they're natives, but they've done us a few other places around where I live. It's like colonies, plantations. I think it's plantation sounds like maybe the right word. I can't recall exactly, but yes, it's basically a set of turf that they managed some pines on to basically stabilize the soil. But you know, It's kind of the crappy habitat on the campus, apparently. So, yeah, look, what I'm hoping to do later in the spring and summer is identify a few plots inside each one of those habitats and basically do some survey work, seeing if there's a significant difference in species diversity and individual quantity of herps undercover in each one of those habitats. So. Get back to your whole cover board thing. Might use cover board. However, I'm thinking just to make speed things up. Apparently, there are protocols for choosing appropriately sized natural cover. and so you can actually set up, select out grids of natural cover that you can just check. So hopefully do a little ecology work, see what the herb communities and some of these different forests look like.
Yes, let the rocks fall in their place.
So
that they will be flipped later.
Save myself a little work.
Great aspirations, man. And like, again, to reiterate, you know, I'd love to be out there. So I'm gunning for it. We'll definitely have to chat on this, because this is just, this would be phenomenal work, you know?
Yeah.
In a grant. Yeah, just awesome. I think this type of thing should be done.
Yeah. You know? Like, it's part like of I mentioned our, with
natural heritage type of a deal, type of sentiment. Yeah.
I was going to say, speaking of coming out this way, I mentioned to Jack, Road Trip Monster, says, you know, now he lives kind of, now he lives a bit closer to us, that the next time, when I first noticed Salamander's moving, I'll send him a notification. He could get a road trip in, because, you know, he's a monster of those, and kind of get his first Midwest herping experience in. So.
Yeah, a little bit here and there. Wouldn't hurt. That'd be fantastic. Reconnect.
Yeah, I'm sure he'd be looking for any excuse to find herps instead of just freezing.
Yeah, it's a pretty big
Texas. He moved to Texas in the first Midwest winter we gave him. It's like, we did our boy dirty.
No, we did him solid, man. This has been a more solid winter we've had in the past years, so. At least for me, though, the snowfall has been, I mean, I'm grateful, but also disappointing. But I am grateful.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just so.
I mean, is it different for you? Has it hit more?
I mean, we haven't had snowfall in, I want to say, a week or so. So
is there still snow on the ground, though, or no?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's gotten nowhere close to being warm enough to melt it off.
So. Yeah, that's the only good thing, that they are creating those packs, and then, you know, if people are already in the know to know that cycle, it melts, and in natural depressions or man-made depressions, you know, saturates everything to a point where it's actual water levels to it, and if it's big enough depression, water body pools, you call them. It's really cool. I haven't gone out to a vernal pool and a couple seasons, so, you know, just talking with you about this, it's like really hyping me up again to be local or like statewide. It's like last year had its ups and downs as every year, but I had some time, more time to go out and just, you know, hike and just do my thing in nature. And I was like, okay, I need to actually schedule these out. I need to do more of these. So
yeah,
getting outdoors time. That's me being esoteric, Nate, but anyway.
Did I ever tell you that I actually did a vernal pools course in high school?
Dude, that's both nerdy and very cool. No.
Yeah, so I took a secondary biology course elective in high school. And it's basically like one of the old local teachers doing whatever whatever he thought was cool. So that course basically consisted of like a fetal pig dissection. It was like a one semester long course, but like we had like 2 hours a day, 5 days a week to get into it. So like a fetal pig dissection for like the first few weeks of the semester. We had a course on mammal skull identification, where he basically just brought in his mammal skull collection.
Awesome, dude.
And then vernal pools, because he had access to go out to all these different vernal pools around the area and set up traps and call, you know, all these ambistomids and learn about like fairy shrimp life cycles and like different algae that are have mutualistic relationship with ambistomid eggs and all that sort of stuff. And then once that wrapped up, it was last few weeks of the semester we went birding pretty much. So
I mean, is that not living the life if you're a professor with any kind of association with biology or the natural world? That's just, you got it made just by having it like that. You got it made.
Yeah. So it's pretty, formational course for me. So I don't know if I've ever said this on the podcast or not. Probably have some point or another. But yeah, that point in high school, before I took that course, I kind of lost interest in biology and wildlife. Thought I would maybe just do reptiles inside, bit of a hobby sort of thing. Because the gen bio course I took in high school sucked so much. And I was losing interest in it. Then that course kind of like, oh, I could actually, there's biology consists of cool stuff. It's not just nerdy microbiology stuff anymore. So it's actually cool stuff that I don't have to be in a formaldehyde stinking lab to see. So
yeah, man, standards are standards, but at the same time, it's hard to conform to a standard that's been set so long ago. And it's just,
yeah,
I don't know. Awesome. We're all unique, so we're all tailored a different way. Like, I'm a visual learner, hands-on type of guy.
Yeah. I've made this joke. I don't believe this joke, but I made a joke that wildlife biologists are people who couldn't cut in microbiology. So they couldn't cut in the field, the one biofield that makes money. So
is that because of what, like medicinal applications?
Medical, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that goes the way, right? Because it's beneficial to our species, since we're very species centric, which obviously to a degree we have to be. I agree. And also, you know, not to get philosophical again, but naturally we're selfish, self-preservation, yada yada. But still, we're so smart that we have compassion, and we try. There's a whole subset or sections that are basically just being compassionate to the natural world, because it's not infinite.
So
that was my takeaway from last year. I think that was to kind of like the wrap around with some other questions, is just get out in nature, reconnect a bit more.
So that was your New Year's resolution, was be more philosophical about flipping 10.
Hey Nate, this is what happens when I'm gone for like legit like a couple months or so. I get quite devotional.
You go to your first cover board of the season, and you just think to yourself, what would Immanuel Kant do?
Immanuel Kant. I'll freak out when I see my first garter of the year, even though it's usually pretty pitiful. It's usually in the clutches of like a raptor, you know.
Yeah,
the caves, you know, a little poor bugger, but
caves. The Gabe snake, as I like to call him.
Yeah, I mean, eventually it'll be a Gabe getter, but we'll see how much getting Gabe will be getting, you know. Tongue twister right there.
I was going to say how Flippin' has their writers. We just spam a picture. Then they have writers. We just spam pictures of decays each year, each section.
dude, that'd be awesome. Segmenting off, you know, you talked a little bit on just like, I guess, a little bit of forest history with Ohio, and like, this is probably totally off tangent, but maybe privy to us because of what we like. I'm like, in like the Amazon basin, there are basically three types of ecosystems, and it mainly has to do with the habitat's relationship with water and elevation. So similar to places like Florida, where going up in slope or going down depression creates complete different habitat types. And so the main three for the Amazon basin is terra firma, so like firm earth, because this is high ground.
Oh, jungle. Yeah, good old terra firma. We have that here. Mm-hmm. Great old US of A too.
There's that firma terra firma. And so basically that habitat type never gets inundated with tidal influences or just water in general. I mean, it'll still get saturated from rain, but it won't get inundated. And then the other two types are Versea, I think I'm saying that right, and Igapo. That's a fun one to say, Igapo. And these both get inundated seasonally. Yeah, but I guess the difference is Igapo gets inundated with like black water. So like the tannin heavy waters that, you know, parts of the rivers have, or clear water. So I don't really get that. And then Versea is usually inundated with like white water. So, and you know, now thinking about it, I kind of get that because white water is usually faster flowing. It's
more oxygenated.
Yeah, more oxygenated. And then the other two, they're a bit more stagnant or saturated. So,
yeah.
And I think these are good pro tips if you're trying to look, say, if you were wanting to do like a herping venture out specifically in like some kind of Amazon region in whatever country that harbors some of that, you got to think about that because that can make or break your trip if you go somewhere and with a company typically and you go to these places and they're flooded out, but to the point where you don't have kayaks or you can't really get further in, that'd be a bust. So you gotta, you know, I think these are really helpful tips. And they might be privy to us just because it's 2026. We might make some moves. We might not. Some might get left behind. Some might not. We will see. But something may be in the works.
Yeah. Like I said, it all depends on how big my tax return is. So how much free money, how much, well, not Chris, free money, how much.
Chris Dieter's book can't be that expensive. Come on. Shout out.
I didn't make it.
Shout out my man to Dieter. Isn't there like a reprint going on Crocs Alive?
Reprint or he still has a few hard covers left.
Okay. So yeah, regardless. And you know, I don't want to take the shine because you know more about this than me. Nate, but Chris Dieter, you know, Crocodilian in Captivity.
I mean, you can still get the book if you want to.
Aficionado. Yeah, just go to how it's linked, whether it's through Amazon or his own webpage. And
it's on Amazon. Book. Yeah.
All right, solid. And, you know, he has a great animal on the cover. What's that guy's name? Not Jaws. What's
a half jaw or Ramses?
Yeah.
Let's see.
Where
did I put the book at?
Yeah, I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know. My bad, my camera went off. It's like you're going in the freaking valleys, Nate. It's hilarious.
Couldn't find it.
No worries, man. But yeah, it's a croc that's beautiful, but it has a bit of a upper jaw deformity, right? Is that kind of the case?
Well, this half jaw. What it is he's one of those T-positive albino Niles, and what he has is under jaw is too long. So I don't think it's half jaw. Now I think about the cover.
To paint a picture, it's a real unique looking Nile crocodile. Not your typical dark olive, green, brown. It's T-positive, freaking white, but
yeah. Well, to be fair, some of the different river basin localities of Niles, they just have just really gold, heavy gold coloring on theirs. I'm sorry, I'm not compulsive. I had to find that book.
Oh no, we got Nate on a spree, but it's a good spree because if he finds the book, we get to see which crocodile it actually is because. Dieter, you know, he names a few of his favorite crocs. You know, he has so many, it'd be impossible to name them all, but there are some crocs that have more notoriety than others and they get a name, which is fair. You know, when you have large collections, most people with large collections don't name their snakes. You know, that's just more of a kind of an intimate or person to person. What in the world, dude? That's hilarious.
Yeah, that's not that's cool. One of the hypos.
And cut. So that's going on the editing board, my man.
Yeah, that's not one of the hypos. That's different. Not different. Now is that? I think her name's Ruby. Going off the top of my head, because they used to have another male that was that really bright yellow color named Titan.
Yeah,
and both that he had both them together. But Titan passed away a few years ago, so he still has Ruby, who's like his biggest female. So,
and from his talks,
It might be Ajax. I wouldn't be surprised if this is like Ajax Junior.
You know what?
Now I think about
it. That's it. That's the only one I met. I think that's Ajax. He looks just like it.
Yeah, and he kind of has a little bit of a twist towards the end of the mouth.
Yeah.
That's not uncommon to happen with Crocs. So.
No, but
like some of the Orinocos he had back in. I have some photos of them, sent to you sometime. They had much more of a twist on the end of the mouth. So, don't know why it happens. Same time, we don't know why orcas in SeaWorld have their dorsal fins curl over. But
do we not really? I thought it was like iron deficiency or something.
I didn't. That's news to me. So,
I don't know. They're playing mysteries out there. But yeah, cool. I mean, I was telling Ramblers, you know, Dieter has quite a big collection. You know, you can't name all the Crocs, but there are some that have more of a notoriety than others, and so they get a name. And that Ajax Junior feller was real interesting looking, real pretty, but interesting. And then I think before you were looking, I was like, well, I know that Madagascan Nile Crocs are pretty colorful, but yeah, you're right. You know, Nile Crocs are another one, kind of like American Crocs, where there might be some cryptic speciation if you really pressed on, or at least subspecifics.
Yeah.
Because there are some that I see in documentaries, and obviously documentaries can mock up and have different clips, whatever, but like the squamosals on some Nile Crocs are like more impressive than others. And obviously that can be a genetic thing, but I've seen many videos and examples.
Well, I mean, if they are super species, then it is a genetic thing, so.
to a deeper level, yes, to a bigger group, but yeah, they're another one. It's been released now, but I have not had time to like read articles and stuff, dude. Like, there's been word on a cutis, right? Like, have they been divvied up,
splitting up? Yeah, I had to look at the paper again, but I don't know if they're going to be permanently split up or not. I think they had to suggest that. I had to double check the paper. I haven't had a chance to read it either, but I mean, it wouldn't surprise me, especially if they just split Pacific and Atlantic populations from apart.
Yeah, I mean, how many are really going through the canal? I mean, enough, but maybe not.
Same time, it's not that many over the course of, 100-ish years, a little less than, a little bit more than, versus how long that isthmus has been dividing the two populations from each other?
Millions and millions. Yeah. Even though, you know, it's always interesting to think about, like, you know, there's been what, fossil deposits in California, and, you know, they ranged up.
I don't know about California.
Baja, California.
The Gulf of California is what they call it, right?
So, something like that.
And like, it was just records them like eating like sea lions and stuff like that.
That's the main reference. This one paleo artist, you know, fantastic work. He's well recognized, but man, I can't for the life of me pin his name down. But yeah, he creates fantastic paleo art, and yeah, a cutis taking down a sea lion, which is just kind of wild to think about. That could have been a possibility. I guess in the back of my lizard brain, it's like reptilian superiority, you know.
Return of the Archosaur.
Oh yeah, Archosaur achievement type of deal. It's hilarious. What's hilarious, man, is I have slowly but also steadily been creeping into viewing and photographing more and more winged archosaurs. I have not turned to a new light, but I have found there are other doors to walk through.
There are many paths in life. Some of them lead off of cliffs.
I was just trying to look at the peregrine falcon, dude. Come on.
Make that t-shirt.
That would be fair. Yeah. That wouldn't be bad, dude. You know, the reason... No, go on. My bad.
I don't know how well sales would do, but I think it'd be funny to go to McGee Marsh wearing a t-shirt that said inferior archosaur and had a silhouette of a songbird on it.
Oh, there would be some paleo folks that would be up for grabs for that. A lot, actually. I would be up for grabs. Or maybe, I don't know. Now I'm conflicted. I'd probably grab it. I'm not too much of a hard
I'm
ass
just wondering
on
how many heads that would turn us into like a popular birding area or not.
that one. Man, I didn't know you were being on devious time.
Well,
That.
not too far away from where I live is, I kind of well heard of popular birding spot called McGee Marsh on the shores of Lake Erie. So, it's like a lot of songbirds stop there. It's kind of like their last stop before they make the final leg over to Canada for the spring migration. And so a lot of birds go there pretty frequently. And I mentioned that birding part of that high school course. One of them was he took a Saturday and we went up to McGee Marsh. And just some random old lady just cut me down to size out of nowhere. So,
What
like,
do you mean?
I was just, there was some bird off in the top of a tree a bit of ways away, and I was trying to focus my values with it. I just kind of muttered it underneath my breath, like, I guess all I see was a little bit of orange, and I was like, what? I just muttered to myself, what is that bird? And this old woman next to me just said, get a grip, it's an oriole. It's like,
Oh,
I'm sorry, Grandma, I didn't know I was talking to you. Like,
that's not a cookie in the wild. It's an Oreo. Well, I guess I can see how that could leave a sour taste of you for birder slash birder associated folks. I mean,
yeah.
that sounds really pretentious.
I mean, it could have
Yeah,
been
or
American Red Start.
you know what? I do know what those look like, and you're not wrong. You know,
So.
beginner birder.
So take that random old lady. To be fair, it wasn't Oriole, but
You mean Old Swan? But I mean, I didn't know what a Baltimore Oriole was when I first saw one up in Indiana. I was like, "This is the most tropical looking bird. Why is it in Indiana? Like, what's going on?" And then I realized they frequent right by me ish, you know, so I've seen them around here too, and I'm like, that's a cool bird, man.
yeah.
Even though I like the big birds, I like the birds of prey, or bops, as some people would call them. Out there seeing a bop.
You like going out and seeing wild bops.
Oh, dude. It'd be bopping out there for sure. It'd be bopping out there. But yeah, so I've divvied my outdoor time when I have the free time and also want to endure the cold. I mean, it's not so bad right now in the times I've gone out, but I also haven't been dim-witted and gone out when it's crazy cold. So that's been fun. I guess, you know. No, I just probably shouldn't. I guess one thing I would say is I'm looking forward to seeing more bull snakes. And I don't want to gloat, like rub it into anybody. You know, I'm sorry you don't live close to bull snakes, Nate. That'd be awesome if you did. But you know, I'll take advantage of where I'm at based in Illinois. So I would like to see more bull snakes this spring.
That's okay. I'll just cry into all this money that my state government didn't take from me.
Hey, you will be rewarded with snake money, hopefully, in the future.
Yeah, did work on my taxes earlier today, so there's that.
Yeah, man, I need to get on it because I'm still a two, technically three herp crew here. You know, I have a to refresh the ramblers, you know, I have a blue tongue skink, a female that I've had for, oh my God, going on 9 years this year. 9 years I've had her, Quincy. And then 2 years ago at the first premier Colubrid Fest, I acquired a female king rat snake from the Zirkles. And also, if you guys aren't in the know, Colubrid Fest 3 is happening in September.
Yeah.
Just look it
Hopefully.
up on Facebook and you'll find the dates and location, or maybe you know off the top of your head,
Yeah.
right? Or is that too,
I
is
think
that
it's
pressing you?
last weekend in September, I think, go off the top of my head.
And they will be in Evansville, Indiana, so southern part, kind of
Way
close
down south
to
in Indiana, close to Kentucky.
the Kentucky and Illinois border. So, well, an interesting region. And since it would be in September, maybe pack some hiking gear because you could go out and potentially see some stuff.
Any particular species that come to mind?
I mean, copperheads for sure. Copperheads, your gray or black rats, whatever. Eastern rats, whatever. King,
Alleghaniensis. Yeah.
yeah, king snakes. So yeah, real neat neck of the woods
Yeah,
area.
hopefully we can make it this year. Hopefully.
Yep, I'd rather say hopefully, but most likely, I will go. I can't imagine missing for second year straight. And it's not, it is a little bit farther this time around, but it would have been, I think, about the same duration wise if I were to, if we, if I were to, or to have gone in the, where was it at? In Fort Wayne.
Yeah.
So it would have been a little bit farther regardless.
When I first when they were suggesting Cincinnati, I was like, yes. Then I suggested Evansville. I was like, no, that's like 3 more hours driving.
But again, and you also, I think you're only an hour away from Snake Road. Obviously, I don't want to put anybody out of an hour. I won't do that, but then maybe fact check me out. Maybe it's a little bit further, maybe 2 hours. But still, I think cool region. I've never been to that part. So, but I mostly want to go for the experience that Kluber Fest is to reconnect. And already I've seen some folks, including previous guests, saying that they've already, busted out the funds and got their ticket, and they're a go. They're ready. So it's like,
That's like about an hour and a half drive or so from
So if you,
Shawnee.
okay, if you were a maniac, don't want to spur anyone on, but that is doable. I personally don't think we'd do it because, look, to reiterate, I would be there for the experience, for the
Yeah.
network, people. And everything.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Yeah, so that's a potential idea to try and go to Shawnee. So.
Yeah, it'd be awesome, that whole area. So maybe what would be an aspiration for you? Like, please say Water State, please say Water State. But I mean, obviously the cover boards is kind of already, you're putting it, you're working it. So
Yeah, I mean, if I can find the weekend to do it, I definitely would love to go out to Northwest Ohio and get on those islands. But perhaps there's some other stuff I could possibly do this summer. I could possibly help with some research work with some of the scientists down main campus doing like Massasauga and timber snake, timber rattler surveys and stuff like that. So
you said the whole
that.
country timber snake. That was fantastic, dude. That was spot on. The accent and everything. Damn timber snakes.
My nigga was ain't real church. It ain't real church service. Us would break out the timber snakes and have them hand around. I mean, yeah, Earl died, but I guess he wasn't pure of heart. I guess he had sin in his heart.
He's a sinner. He's a goddamn, but oh, dude, that's hilarious. Yeah, that would be awesome if you were able to collab on that.
Just another T-shirt idea is like the "Don't Tread on Me" timber rattler. Like has like a straw hat and a straw mouth, and it just says "Timber Snake."
Timber snake. Got yourself here a timber snake. Oh, dude. Yeah, with the corn straw in his mouth. That's in perfect envisionment right there, dude. I would buy that one more than
instead of
the
just being coiled on itself, it's coiled around a bottle of moonshine.
dude, I'm taking mental notes. I'll hold you to this. This is actually a good, a funny idea. It's a fantastic idea. Fantastic design. But
Oh, open up the fresh day after it gets launched. Zach Laughlin bought all stocks.
they'll be all at the next Kluber Fest. Donation time. Oh no. Or auction. Auction is a better word for that. That's what it is. Yeah, man. That would be, like, to reiterate, that'd be awesome to do that if you were able to hop on. Again, we have aspirations to go international again. We'll see if we were able to link up with that. I guess the only thing is that we could maybe this would be a time to segment just a little bit and bebop around this region of the world that we both find pretty cool. Or maybe also to start it off, though, from our last Colombia trip, obviously we definitely knocked off some targets off collectively our list, but there were, of course, a plenty that were not, just because it's a huge country and herps aren't always the easiest things, yada yada.
And we spent
But
like 60% of that trip driving, but
yeah, the more we dwell on it, the more I'm like, yeah, we were just so gung ho and foolhardy. But I'm also like, hey, we learned. We definitely learned, because I was like, I do not want to waste more than half my time on a vacation driving. That's just too much time expenditure on an already stressed out situation we had ourselves. We lost a day. It's funny, as you gained a day, but you didn't have the
For
bros, you
nothing.
couldn't do
For nothing.
nothing. You couldn't do nothing. It's like, man, what are the odds?
It's basically a whole day of me just trying to stay out of trouble.
It's
In
just like,
a
what?
country where I basically ask for a beer or a glass of milk. So
Dude, you know what? We should have took that as a sign. If you
what's
when
up?
you arrived there before us, it's like, oh, Nate's there before us, guys. Let's just cancel the whole thing. Let's go back home. Let's try this again next year. I was like, well, yeah. Still,
I would
man.
miss.
Well, still, what an entryway to South America. Colombia is amazing, especially when you get out in those rural. I mean, a lot of it's rural. It's second class country, but man, like going out from Bogota westward, so beautiful. The mountain ranges, there was like so many meadow type habitats that I was not prepared for. And then you have freaking sheer cliff faces with waterfalls off the sides of the road, and you just have these nutty landscapes, like real scenic. Probably really good for birds, maybe not so good for herbs, but just, I wouldn't have mind to pause at some of those sites. Those are some of the things also to consider. It's like, it's tough when you're pressed for time, but thinking back on it, since we drove so much, it's like, well, we could have stopped a bit more for stuff like that. But it's okay. I'm glad we stopped when we did.
Yeah. Yeah, that's and driving there is something else, so
Man.
especially in Bogota.
Yeah, the way we arrived and entered Bogota, that was like, it was so crazy, because on the return, it was also like, the last day was relatively mild, but like second to last day when I was driving through it, holy crap, man. And it feels a lot longer since you're closer to the equator. And so, you guys, like around six, it's already like dark, or
Yeah.
getting close to.
And
And
when it does get dark, it gets dark quick.
it gets dark quick, and there's not as many lights compared to like where we're at, or at least not many tall lights. There are a lot of lights, but it's mainly the rears of
They're at like eye
mopeds.
level or maybe first story level or something like that.
It's just all these bikes, all these mopeds and bikes. Bogota is a bike city through and through, unfortunately for cars.
Yeah. Which, I mean, look at how traffic was there. Makes sense to have a bike instead.
Well, 100%, but obviously it's kind of a cyclical a cycle. It's like, well, you either improve it more for bikes and make laws, or it's just tough. Infrastructure like that is tough to deal with. There's so many people crammed in. I mean, 7 to 8 million in metropolitan area of Bogota. I mean, that's a certified city, man. It's a big city.
I mean, how many does Chicago have?
Yeah, it dwarfs Chicago. Even including the metropolitan area. And again, if you want to include Chicagoland, that's like, man, I used to always have that state on me. That's a Google question. Jeez, thanks, Nate. But no, Bogota certified. I mean, that's bigger than Panama City. That's bigger than quite a few. In terms of South American cities, not too many dwarf that kind of population to a city.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, go off the top of my head, the only ones I could think that come close to rivaling the size would probably be like, what, Sao Paulo, Rio de Janeiro, Buenos Aires?
Yeah. Okay, so.
Maybe Cartagena?
Cartagena. Well, 100%. Okay. Medellin is another big one in Colombia, but 3, 4, I don't know. So, you know, from Gemini, it's saying Chicago's metropolitan area is like 9 million. So, but that's including like other big cities like Naperville. And like that, to me, that doesn't really count because I'm talking about Chicago proper. Bogota is proper. It's just its own thing. Obviously, there's subdivisions, yada, yada, but it's Bogota. It's all that. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Certified city stamp of approval. So,
the reason I brought it up is like the closest traffic situation wise in terms of how dense and bumper to bumper it was. Texas. Was going through Chicago, Chicago, okay. Middle of Chicago, it during rush hour. That's the closest I ever came to that in here in the States. So, but speaking of comparisons to Texas, what did I tell you when we got down onto the Llanos plane?
You're like, whoa, this is East Texas. This is, yeah. You know, like we're back in the States.
Yeah. And now that you've been to Houston area?
100%. I'm in accordance to this statement. Like, you know, I've been in the RGV, and obviously that gets more humid and more dry, yada, yada. But East Texas proper, holy crap, man. That humidity is no joke. So, in fact, going in June, I'm like, this was more humid than being out there in Columbia, which is just...
Well, because we're at the very end of the dry season, so... It was hot, but it was dry. So.
Very true, but still quite an amazing statement to say out loud and know that it's relatively true.
No, I was talking more like the landscape, but
landscape as well, because a lot of fields, you know, whether they're agricultural fields that still has what do you call them, buffers, like natural buffers or remnant habitat, yada yada, and then there's man-made ditches, pools. I mean, it does fly because it's, you know, closer to sea level, lower. It's flat. It's also flat. That's one thing I noticed that was similar around Houston area. Pretty flat looking. It's dynamic, yeah. But, you know, it's pretty flat. And yeah.
But what's one region? Well, there's a couple of regions, but what's one big region of Colombia we never got a chance to go to?
Well, dude, there's so many. There's the, and, you know, we did kind of go through a little bit, like, of the Pacific Lowlands. That would have been another one to be cool to have delved in a bit more. That one was a bit tougher to crack down on the spots. And then, obviously, we legit passed through the entire Andes.
I mean, twice.
Twice.
Well,
so,
if you think about it, more like four times because it splits into two. So.
Yeah. But just the three-finger... you know, mountain range mark, we crossed it twice, and I'm like, wow, that's where just the beauty, the illustration was just amazing. But I would say the Amazon region of Colombia would be awesome to hit someday. I mean, just phenomenal, because most people wouldn't know that. I mean, how big the Amazon River Basin really is. I mean, it stretches even all the way into parts of southern Colombia.
Yeah.
Northern Brazil, yada, yada, Peru.
So.
And so the Colombian Amazonic side, my bad, is no less spectacular. And it's pretty speciose, as Nate is now pulling up on the good old INAT. And, you know, love or hate it, INAT is a good reference. Obviously, it can be a tool that can be abused, but it can also be to gain from academically / selfishly.
Yeah. So I drew a search area over kind of the tri-country area where Peru, Colombia, and Brazil all meet, and 207 species of reptiles and amphibians. How many do we have in Illinois and Ohio, probably not 207.
No, even if you maybe combine, I don't know. It might edge out if you combine them, but still.
And that's just INAT observes.
Yeah, I mean, there's more species than we're probably seeing on here. But you'd have to go through, you know, literature or actual resources to know. You know, that's the thing with INAT that most people tend to forget. It's not the end all be all in terms of like in terms of different kinds of species.
This is just a species that someone who has an INAT account and wants to upload to INAT loads up have seen.
Yeah, it's an observation. Certified observation. Oh,
that'd be kind of cool to see.
That would be. I mean, just it's like a combination of a collar lizard and
like a redhead African redheaded galma.
Yeah, dude, perfect analogy with a clubby tail.
I mean, so for those who are listening, we're looking at a tropical thorny tail iguana or Eurocentron flaviceps. So that's one of the species in kind of that tri-country area.
And, you know, iguanas are another, you know, I guess family or clad that they're weird lizards. Not all of them look alike, you know. They could be pretty distinct looking than just the basic, you know, green or rock iguana body plan. They come in a lot of shapes and sizes. Oh, they got Fulgidus. My bad. I got excited with the...
I was going to say, that's a interesting name for a frog.
Fulgidus. No, convict tree. Well, it looks like it's wearing convict pajamas underneath his underbody for folks not viewing. Oh, yeah. I could totally see that. I could also see it being called robber frog, but... there's already a whole
genera. Group of those things. Robbers and rain frogs.
Robbers, yeah.
So what's one you're getting excited about?
The green vine snake, like the OG vine snake that most people think about, like the huge one.
Yeah, the Oxbellus fulgidus.
Mm-hmm. Fulgidus. I mean, they're cool. I mean, they're a nice, hefty, sizable vine snake. They're not your rinky dinky pencil little guys, which are awesome. I think all my snakes are awesome, but I like big snakes, and I cannot lie, man. You know.
So what do you say the odds are that one of those would munch on your ear?
Highly, highly. They're like missiles. Just look at their face, man. Wow. It's funny, man. I still scratch that part of my ear every now and then, and I think I still have just the slightest remnants, like a slight rough texture feeling. And I remember when it chewed on me, I mean, I wasn't bothered. I don't think the venom was too detrimental. It got a little inflamed, but what bite doesn't? Like, it definitely had a little bit of a localized effect.
That could have just been bacteria.
Bacteria or the fact that, you know, maybe teeth were in there. Hopefully not, but.
Now that would be a really cool thing to see. The aquatic coral snake.
Showstopper. I think these are also the biggest of the corals.
Let's see.
They get pretty big.
80 to 100 centimeters, so about 1 meter, with a maximum of 135, although there's an unproven report of 180 centimeter specimen. So we're talking something that could potentially get 4 foot, which is pretty big for a coral.
Yeah, and I mean, they just look chunkier too, like, they're well proportioned. They're more proportioned like a freaking lampro than anything. They're like, they're chunky guys, but I guess, you know, they have chunkier clientele to deal with as food.
Yeah.
Since you're like those more warmer latitudes, there's more limbless amphibians and like Sicilians. I think that's mainly what they eat too. Sicilians. I don't know.
The Sicilians are like maybe like freshwater eels, I think, are part of their diet as well. Could be wrong.
That would surprise me. Sounds right. Coral snake diets are pretty weird. Personally. Yeah. I'm just plugging in my laptop. Okay, well, how about this? You know, what's one of the herps that was on your list to see in Colombia that we didn't get to see that you would have liked, you would love to see?
Let's make it a little fun. Three guesses to name the species.
Oh boy. Three guesses, no hints. Oh, come on now. You give me a hint.
Like, I'll give you a hint after each guess.
No, dude. Like, I gotta say, like, is it a snake or is it a...
It's not a snake.
It's not a snake. Is it a crocodilian?
It is.
Okay. I think this is the top tier your list is. Is this the Orinoco?
Yes.
Good, man. I'm glad that you're staying true to what you want to see. You know, it was a little bit tough to think about really going out of our way to see it. But I'm like, man, that's a cool croc, man. They're not talked about enough. There's not enough research on them. I can see why you love them. They're awesome.
Look, yeah.
Is there a theory that they're closely related to cutis? Like they split off from a common ancestor? Or do we not know the relationship?
I would have to look at the cladogram, but it wouldn't surprise me if their closest cousin is a cutis.
Yeah, I mean, they're just like them. Just think of a more, what's the term? Attenuated snout, but chunkier build as like a big mature animal. I don't know. They're a weird one because, you know, as Nate knows, they're highly endangered. You know, it's not too many of them left.
And the core of their range is in Venezuela, which for gringos is kind of still a no-go. No-go gringo.
Kind of sketchy for sure. So, yeah, they're one I would like to hope stick around for sure. Okay, well, a fantastic choice, man. You're a white whale, which hopefully will not be so white anymore someday. That's a great choice, I guess. Let's just give them a refresher. You've worked too with Orinocals.
At Crocodile Encounter, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Got plenty of pictures of the ones they used to have there. So
were they the ones that you would say maybe you least trusted because you knew their capabilities, or were they pretty chill? Because you worked with like four of them, or
see here, they had like six fully grown adults when I was there, plus a couple juveniles. And I think it's meant told the story once, but basically going my first day there, I saw one of the experienced workers feeding the Orinoco, so I just saw how fast they moved, and I was like, oh yeah, an alligator this is not. So
welcome to Crocodilia. Yeah. Yeah, alligators are like such the exception, man. Even with Chinese, even though I think you've had experience, there are some cantakers, Chinese alligators, but
I would say the majority of Chinese alligators are probably a little bit on the cantankerous side from what I've heard, but I little man again, I could just be talking out my ass on that one. It's just the ones we had were kind of little punchy, but in the book himself, he said, he's never seen a crocodilian guard its eggs quite as ferociously as a Chinese alligator.
And, you know, that's kind of sweet, given that these are tiny, tiny guys for alligator, you know, 4-5 foot. So,
yeah,
they got to give it their all. But, you know, even caiman are like so different. You know, they're like the opposite extreme of the alligatoroids, you know, snappy and fast and calculated, not dopey and powerful and menacing, but unassuming as like Americans. So it's interesting.
Yeah.
I'm not going to compare, you know, but I will say, let's do the same then to piggyback off, you know.
Okay. What is the species you wanted to see most that we didn't get to see? A snake.
Yes.
Was it a venomous species of snake?
Oof. No, and I will give you a further hint. It's a colubrid. Yeah, one more hint, but don't waste it.
Is it an arboreal species?
It is.
Is it a chicken snake or a tiger rat?
The good old Spilotes. Yeah. Good old Spilotes. I've lately been such a fanatic of arboreal colubrids, especially when they get big, like tiger rats. And don't get me wrong, like, you know, I've seen them at Tinley and whatnot, and they have the weirdest proportions because they look like a skinny rat snake, but you know, they get huge. They're very expressive. They puff out their throats. I just love their colorations, whether it's gold and black or highlighter white and black. They're cool. They're really cool snakes because we don't have anything similar that's like highly keeled like that. Rat snakes are keeled, but not like that.
Yeah. I was going to say, I just saw a video a few days ago. Some guy did one of those like indoor like plant grower tents. They have them set up for his Vietnamese blue beauty snake. And, it, you know, it's like really big growing tents that, you know, fully decked out. And that just looked really cool. I was like, you know what? For getting a really big setups, that's probably one of the more financially responsible options for getting like a 10 foot by 4 foot by 5 foot tall. That's probably the most financially responsible option. So,
yeah, and like just think about the pros and cons. It's not made of like super heavy material, like glass or like metal, whatnot. It could be, it's highly customizable, you know, because what I've seen is people will lay the foundation with like cement boards or bricks, create that kind of perimeter, and then just build up from that, like reinforcements. And like some grow tents have like additional flaps, so you gotta seal those real good. But yeah, it could be a viable option.
And they usually come with a lot of climate control, or at least the ability to add in a lot of climate control capabilities. So,
yeah, seen it with misters and yada yada. It's very doable, and you know, it would do justice for the species because their humidity requirements and their arboreal nature. This is a really interesting snake to me. They're real fascinating. They're one I could definitely see myself getting into, you know, but.
And I think maybe this year's Kluber Fest, or
no, I like them, but I don't think they're the snake for me now. I think their metabolism is too fast, and I just wouldn't want to risk it because almost all snakes are naturally lean, even the fat looking ones. That's just pure muscle. But with these guys, I could see myself that because I hear that they need water, and so they need to be misted constantly ish, and they need water every day, like fresh, yada yada. If I were gone for, say, a day or so, I'd probably be torn up about leaving them. But maybe not a day. Maybe I'm exaggerating. But you couldn't leave them long without tending to, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, you don't want to deal with them yet because they're high metabolism. All right, again, what was the species you got at Kluberfest?
No, bud. Look, king rats are way more in line with North American colubrids here. My girl Annabelle is still down for brumation, and I've had her down since middle of November. So I mean, that's a good track record. That's already what, like almost 3 months.
Yeah,
and I just like raising them up like that. I did it to her last year as a juvenile, and she took it like a champ. Obviously, I monitored temps, but yeah, took it like a champ, perfectly fine. So. Why not keep doing it? I think it's healthy for them. You don't have to do it, obviously, but it's a nice break. I'm not going to lie. And I'm also in the midst of transitioning like her cage and whatnot. So I'd rather do that with her not needing that space. So,
yeah.
So, but no, I see with the chicken snakes, they're different. They're tropical as all get out. Like they need constant, pretty warm temps.
So you probably need to get their own room or something like that, or have your own tropical room eventually one day.
I mean, either that or, I was just talking off a whim. I don't know if I would ever see myself owning them. I'd probably be an old man. That's kind of what I'm getting at. I'd rather have animals that I'm more in tune with and are more in tune to my kind of lifestyle. And the king rat is awesome. Obviously, we've talked about indigos, and we had, someone, indigo breeder Kate on for indigos, and that's awesome. I don't need more convincing to want to get an indigo, but I think about them too. I think they would be hardier, and they could, last longer out tending to. But I would like to dedicate time to dry marking. They're so cool.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
So cool.
you think it can Annabelle a little friend this Cooperfest or not?
So if we are doing, collection updates, that is potentially going to happen this year, whether it's Tinley, if I find something right, or Kluberfest is acquiring another king rat, because I would like to at least have a pair. And Annabelle is straight up a normal. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if she popped out something like Annery or something common like that. Or maybe no, not Annery. Annery's not common. What is a common morph for king rats? I don't know. The king rat morphs are exploding as we speak. It is nuts what's been going on the last couple of months even. But yeah, I think that will happen. Now, to reverse it back on you, your scrubby, how's that doing?
Getting a little bit of suck shed, so I got some sphagnum moss. Going to put up a humid hide for him, get him all humidified. And I'm thinking this summer I might get a female southern. So see
So
if we
wait,
can get those
it is
guys
a
up.
tannin bar. My bad. It's a tannin
No, it's
bar,
not.
right?
No, it's no, it's not a tannin bar. I won't say Halmahera. It's southern is the broader. Greater type, I guess what you call it. I believe it's Halmahera. Let me double check. I mostly keep track of it through since I ordered it through Morph Market. I kind of keep a track through Morph Market what it was. Let's see here.
Well, still, man, scrubs are awesome. If I were to dive into pythons, it would be, and like I would
Maruki,
go,
that's it.
oh, this is a Maruki.
Maruki, yeah.
That is ironic. That is cool.
So, but also, actually, by the time this is going out, the episode that I have in the, with Stephen Cush would have been out for a week. But for you, Brian, it's this Tuesday. I have scheduled my episode with Stephen Cush coming out. So,
Okay, man, I can't wait. The scrub shepherd himself,
yeah. Could you
I
see yourself getting to scrubs?
that's
Do you
kind of
see
what I was
yourself
alluding
turn to the dark side?
to the scrub side. There are a few pythons on my list if I were to ever keep some, and scrubs are definitely up there, the top tier. And I think for the same reasons you like them, they're inquisitive, they look at you. You can see things working in their brain, but obviously, as young pythons, especially, they're kind of like, get away from me, or they have their
Yeah.
moods. They have their moods. I understand that with Annabelle, she has her moods, but she's been a trooper and like being more mellowed out with me, just looking, handling her. I mean, I don't handle my animals too much. I don't see a reason to, but still, I want them to be pretty chill, not overly stressed when I do.
Yeah.
That's why we do it. But yeah, it's good to hear that you might get a male, and
I already have a male.
oh, I mean, you mean female. I mean, that'd be sweet
Yeah.
if we did
But
that.
yeah, we'll talk with him. He says what might be the next big locale in scrubs would be Aru locales. So the Aru scrubs. So you're looking into getting scrubs. That might be the thing to get into.
Yeah. I mean, that's ironic though. You said that he said that, I guess, because I would think that maybe Helma Harris might turn into something big as well. Just because when they first came in and like they were all dark and drab and not too colorful, but now that people are breeding them, I think Steven is as well. They're really getting a lot unlocked out of them in terms of coloration potential. So, yeah,
Yeah.
scrubs are another deep rabbit hole. I have enough deep rabbit holes to go to. Plus, I want I want to herp and live life and do stuff.
Yeah.
I just don't want to build a collection too big too fast, for sure. Yeah.
But yeah, speaking of herping, I did look at what some of the airfare would be to get to some of the islands you find scrubs on Indonesia are. It's like, ooh, that's definitely further down the road.
It's a dedication slash investment type of deal. Yeah, for sure.
It would have to get to the point, like if I was somehow, like, say, I don't know, you make a YouTube of going on those herping trips, somehow got big enough that it would pay for itself, then I could justify doing that trip, but.
And, you know, that brings up another thing, and I may have told the Ramblers on our Columbia trip recap, but I recorded some nice film segments with my actual, you know, Nikon semi-professional camera. I mean, nothing crazy, but I was excited to make a video, and I come to replay the videos, and they were all in slow motion. I was like, I did the number one error as an amateur photographer, videographer. I didn't review any of
what
my
your
crap.
Settings were before.
Yeah, like video settings, yada, yada. I didn't do any of that crap I typically would have, because I was so chock-a-block full of energy from, like, going out and exploring new landscapes. So, yeah, that was hilarious. But still, I got plenty of beautiful photos and obviously memories from it. But, yeah. I would say if we were to go international again, obviously record and maybe implement, you know, I you don't have a GoPro per se, but you have like an action camera, or is it a GoPro, but regardless, you know,
I have a tripod that I can hold my camera with. That's what you're asking about.
Yeah.
My cell phone.
Freaking extender poles. You know, I need to implement more of that because they're convenient. And I think the footage that you could get off of them is pretty cool and intimate, because you're literally putting the subject right there.
See,
to the
Bushmaster, you get decent, like, close-up photos of the videos of the face without getting your hands in the danger zone, so to speak.
Yeah, like, freaking talk about over 200 species in the Amazon region of Colombia. Imagine, you know, getting up on, like, say, caiman, like daybreak caiman, or freaking a green anaconda underwater under like a sunken trunk, tree limb. I mean, well, that's more like Olympus style if you're going underwater, but still, you know what I mean? You're getting right up in there in a sense, but not putting yourself too close to the animal, kind of. I just think that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
That would be so cool.
Like green Bushmaster in that area.
Okay, I would be curious. Okay, obviously anaconda, because in the Amazon, but they're actually relatively hard-ish to find in Colombia, and they also have a decent range. You know, they're even in the technically the, what was it again, Orinoquia / Llanos. Like, they're in the fields as well, in the flooded fields.
See if it has
them.
It's just show a map of the observations.
Beautiful. Nate is showing us some INAT photos of green anacondas. Not a frequently, at least, observed and submitted species, but still. I mean, anaconda has a huge range. The green anaconda, think about it. I mean, that is actually, I've never actually seen the range of green anacondas, I think, before now, to be frank. I didn't know it was that expansive. But it's also pretty, I guess I could say disjunct, but also you have to imagine where these places are. I mean, most people maybe aren't surveying, putting in the work, and also safety.
Yeah.
Safety's a big factor. And I'm seeing with a lot of these gaps, I'm like, I can kind of see why.
Yeah. Places that, you know, not a lot of people with fancy cameras want to go to.
Just look at some snakes, you know. But still, it's interesting to see that they are kind of tied in with, well, not tied in, but, you know, they're associated with the Amazon River Basin and just lots of rivers. Yeah, taking down a caiman. Freaking wild. That's got to be the worst way to go, just because, you know, it's going to take so long for your oxygen saturation to deplete, and then you're finally like donezo, since caiman can last for a good bit in their struggles. And then there's like evidence like they can last so long that they do manage to wrestle. And there's like a YouTube video of like a huge green anaconda and like a spectacle came in locked in Mortal Kombat. And I think they either both died or the green anaconda won, but its head was like practically split in half because the caiman managed to bite it on the head. So it ain't over till it's over.
Ain't over till the fat lady sings.
Yeah.
Or the chonky Bowid gets his head split open.
Yeah. And needs to take some tips from Jaguares. And now Nate has gone to provide us with beautiful observations of Spilotes. You know, tiger rats, chicken snakes, whatever. They're beautiful, beautiful arboreal colubrid.
And if you want to talk about range,
they're pretty unreal too, ranging from, I think the furthest north is Tamaulipas, Mexico. And then the furthest south is parts of Argentina. And that is well known.
Yeah, like the northernmost corner of Argentina.
Yeah. And then a little further south, what was that? Paraguay?
Uruguay?
Oh, no, that's
Brazil. No, that's Brazil. That's still Brazil. Uruguay's all they did here.
Yeah.
Yeah, Paraguay. Yeah.
Yeah, that is, I mean, literally intercontinental.
Yeah.
So that's pretty unreal.
It's going to be, it'd be really hard to find something that has greater range than that.
But, you know, I don't think it reflects current maybe literature because they did split them up. Like, there is now another, like, not subspecific. There's actually a new species of Spilotes that looks like a tiger rat, but it has, like, its scales are bigger.
Yeah.
So, is that still, like a huge range.
Do you know off the top of your head where that one's range is?
No, I don't. This was a while ago. And in fact, a buddy encountered one in the... Oh, I do remember, because he was in Ecuador. He encountered it in Ecuador, of all places. And apparently, over there, I don't know if because of where they are. Well, I mean, yeah, it has to be, I think, of where they are. They speciated into something different. And they look different. I mean, they have different scale, scutellation, and everything. Yeah, I have to go back and check out that message. Oh, sorry, Markin. Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. Even though I don't even want to get into what that is on the furthest right. Like, I know there's like more species of the Markin, but I don't know the cladistics and complexities of that. I'm like, I just know the good old Eastern Texas blacktail and yellowtail. Like anything, like Mexican or what, there's blacktails, aren't they?
So your Mexican indigo is rubidus, I'd say, or at least it's what it's purported to be. But yeah, blacktail, I think is one of these.
But I think it's like even like subspecific. Like technically, it's Milanurus rubidus. Oh, hey, look, that was one of my photos. That's funny.
That's yours?
Further left. Yeah.
That's your photo. Man,
no,
you're
everywhere.
That's you're famous now.
I'm not famous. Yeah.
I'm not famous. Yeah. Arguably the worst type of famous.
Yeah.
Man, but what you look at your window now, you see a TMZ reporter waiting outside for you.
Hey, I mean, the top observer dude. Freaking that guy! I mean,
Bro Trucks.
Imagine seeing that many. I mean, clearly, probably seen way more, but that's just how many he's put.
Of course, he's the curator of herpetology at the Gladys Porter Zoo.
Oh, Clint! Oh, I recognize him. Yeah. And funny enough, he and I messaged long ago when I did go to RGV. I didn't know that was his account. That's hilarious. That's funny, man.
You like to have him on the podcast someday, maybe?
You know what? I wouldn't mind mentioning it, seeing if seeing if that bridge is still crossable. Might as well. And plus, yeah, I mean, freaking in the zoo field, but also working towards conservation, because Gladys Porter Zoo is a well-known zoo, especially for like their herp collection. Yeah, herp. I mean, Orinoco's, and that's kind of where a lot of the tiger rat stock comes from, at least, you know, I'm hearing from word of mouth from the other old head herpetoculturalists and collared lizards. I mean, yeah, I haven't gone. Oh, no, I want to go back to the RZV. Jeez. So many places, so little time, Nate. So little.
Yeah. Man.
So many places.
I have some other places that I want to go to as well, especially this year. So,
because I remember, I don't want to beat a potentially dead horse, but like I remember you mentioned like Arizona. I'm like, dude, my sister's out there. I'd like to see her again. And also, monsoon, baby, monsoon. I'd like to experience that. Hey, I know you were itching for something like that too. So that'd be nice.
Yeah.
We can see. Extend a weekend. We can see. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe a weekend, I guess. Depends. We can see. Depends also when the year. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Just delusions of a grandeur, man. No worries. We'll see.
So.
We'll see. Well, dude, I think we should start shutting her down. This has been, like, fantastic. I would say it's funny. We were going to touch more on the Amazon region of Colombia, but we got a pretty good gist going on with it. I'd say we could save that for another time, maybe with someone who's either been around there or at least knows a bit of Colombia herping.
Do you have a hint?
No hints. Just aspirations, potentially. So we'll see. You know.
All right. I would like to close out one thing. We mentioned what in Colombia we'd like to see the most.
Yeah.
Will be another big one for you to see, and I'll think of one as well.
Okay. Okay, I'll give you a hint. It's not a crocodilian this time. Or maybe it wasn't last time either.
Is it a snake?
I'm sorry, man. I'm going to have to Uno reverse you. It's a crocodilian.
Is it palpebrosis?
Yeah, I had to Uno reverse you on that just because I'm too pure of heart for that as well. I love palpebrosis. It was so cool to see. I mean, I'm very happy to have gotten Trigonotus. So happy. How I'm not happy what transpired earlier, but I'm happy that we made it to to see. I'm happy we made it to see.
Well, I also have something I would really like to see if next time we go down there. If we go down there.
Can't be another crocodilian, so snake.
Yep.
Is it big and green?
Depends your definition of big, and they can be green.
Oh, I think I know. I'm going to shoot for it. Is it a puffing snake?
Correctamundo.
Okay. Excellent, man. You know, it's nice that we do have similar tastes in snakes, man, because that's another big one. They used to be with bird snakes, and now they're in it with the tiger rats, so there's Spilotes as well. And these guys actually do get big. They're still lean and, I guess, kind of light or fragile because they're tree snakes. But they get legit big, like over 3 meters. So we're talking 10 plus feet.
And you did an episode with Roy Blodgett back in the day. And he's well known for his puffing snakes. So,
yeah, unfortunately, his that big male he had, handsome boy or whatever, passed away. So that's it's very unfortunate. But he was legitimized like over 11, 12 footer type animal. I mean, enormous, amazing specimen of that species. So yeah, that's a great choice. And I guess one honorable mention I'll toss out is a boa constrictor, not imperator or anything like that. Boa constrictor.
That would be also pretty cool to see.
Yeah, because who wouldn't like to see a boa in the wild? Besides water boas.
I think finding a tree boa would be pretty cool as well. So.
Yeah, and even though people make it seem like they're dimes a dozen and like these vlogs and videos, I'm like, that'd be so cool to say, dime a dozen tree boa. And they're so variable with their patterns, the
Yeah.
colors. That's a solid honorable mention too. Man, yeah, now you got the gears going. I'm like, Colombia, dude, get back in it. But yeah, that's a really awesome region. It is
Yeah, if
actually.
only we could ever go there again. I don't know if we'll be able to make it at all ever anytime in the near future. Unfortunately, folks, I just get had to listen to us ramble about it for the next couple of years, right?
I mean, that's kind of what we're all about, the ramblings. So I think we lived up to our namesake tonight for sure. This was well needed. This was pretty good. Just shooting the shit, getting geared towards a becoming spring
Yeah,
active
and
season,
all the
yada yada.
adventures that holds.
Yeah, man. I mean, I look forward to working on even a little bit of botany. I would like to get into like our natives, maybe do something outside like the yard and plant some natives and yada yada. So I'm definitely
I have
going
someone for you to
down.
talk to. I have someone for you to talk to. Like, I'll tell you after the show.
Yeah, definitely going down the naturalist rabbit hole, which is not a bad rabbit hole to get down. So that would be like, I guess, my finishing words for tonight. Epps, find time to get outside, develop that naturalist oriented mindset if you have it or are discovering that you have, and I guess mental health. I'll toss that out there too. Good mental health.
All right. And with that, another episode is in the books. Once again, thanks you folks for joining us on this cold and dreary night and for our talks of warm weather loving animals. As always, I'm your host, Nate. Once again, joined by my eloquent co-host, my Mr. Brian McDowell.
Yeah, Ramblers, we'll catch you on our next episode of Reptile Ramblings. We'll see you.
Until next time.
Deuce.